Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for Banal of America
of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 9, and on this installment of the program, we're going to venture into yet another realm of the paranormal, which we really neglected for far too long, as we're going to welcome world-renowned psychic and medium Chip Coffey to the program for a conversation about psychic abilities, clairvoyance, and communicating with the other side. And as I said, this is a whole milieu which we've never really gotten into on the program before for a myriad of reasons. And as luck would have it, it kind of came together in an interesting serendipitous sort of way, as these things do here on the program. I'll be heading up to Liverpool, Nova Scotia in a couple of weeks to attend the East Coast Paracon, and it's really going to be an awesome event. I'm really looking forward to it, and what excites me about it is there's going to be a handful of real titans in their field there, specifically two folks who are inherent to Banal of America Audio, Stanton Friedman and Lauren Coleman. So as soon as I saw those two guys were going to be in the same room, it's like Mick Jagger and Bob Dylan hanging out. I have to go up and just be in the presence of that encounter. And beyond that, our friend Paul Kimball will be there. And amongst the titans is our guest tonight, Chip Coffey. So I said to myself, we've never done the psychic stuff. We've never done this realm of the paranormal because, you know, as folks who listen to the show know, I'm increasingly cynical. So it's tough. It's a tough topic to discuss. But I said to myself, now's the chance. You know, here I am, someone who wants everybody to have an open mind. I need to have an open mind, too. I need to really dig into this topic. And Chip Coffey, as I said, is a titan in all this. He's been on a bunch of different TV programs. He's hosted a bunch of different TV programs. He's really a major, major player in this whole field. So I'm very excited to get him on the program and really do appreciate that he's come on Banal of America to talk about all this. So welcome to the show, Chip.
Hello, Tim Banal. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to talking to you, learning more about all this stuff. So, you know,
I'm not sure I have all the answers, any of the answers. But, you know, I'll tell you what I believe, what I've experienced, what I've read, what I've been told. You know, that's about as good as it gets in the paranormal arena. I'm a strong proponent of you can't understand it, can't explain it, can't deny it. But, you know, that we'll get into all that, of course.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, we start out the program with the bio and the background. And, you know, you're sort of a special case as with some of the guests.
I've been called that before, special case, absolutely.
As have I, but I think under different circumstances. But
I think it was probably your, yeah, you're right.
I already enjoying this conversation because I love to laugh on the show.
So,
you know, we start with the bio and the background, but you're sort of a special case because your background, your bio is kind of your whole life, your whole story, your whole what you do. You know what I mean? It's not just like, oh, I research UFOs, but I also came from Tacoma and, you know, I grew up a young, poor black boy kind of thing. So it's, you know, like The Jerk, you know, the movie The Jerk. So
you just gave my entire bio. What are you talking about? You just read it off.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, it's really kind of interesting because it's always the supernatural and the spiritual and the paranormal has always kind of been a part of my life. You're absolutely right.
Hmm. So it's sort of when it came up first when you were like 10 years old, I guess, to sort of what I'm interested in. We'll kind of dive in this way. How does your world-renowned psychic and medium now? It started when you were 10 years old. How does one sort of make their way in the world as a as a burgeoning psychic medium, you know? Like, what do you, at least if someone's into UFOs or Bigfoot, they can go to a club or get online and meet other people. With this, it's like an ability. It's like a skill. So it's a little bit different from those fields.
Well, actually, let's back up from 10 years old and go all the way back to before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
My great-grandmother on my mom's side, my mom's dad's mother, was a Native American medicine woman and shaman. My mother had some unique abilities of her own, and in quite a play on words, my grandmother Coffee on my dad's side of the family read tea leaves, so Coffee reading tea leaves, which I always thought was an interesting little juxtaposition. And then, you know, fast forward to right at the time that I was being born, my mom had to have a C-section, and the minute that I popped out of her, she was in the middle of a near-death experience.
Oh, wow.
Her blood pressure plummeted. Two beings of light came together. She asked to be able to stay with her baby, told them she didn't want to leave her baby. They placed her back in her body. She let out a scream, and the minute that she let out the scream, I went and popped out of my mom. So, you know, I was told even before 10 years old that, you know, as a toddler, pre-memory, my own memories, that I would be playing and doing my thing, and I would stop what I was doing and look at the phone, and the phone would ring shortly thereafter. And then when I became verbal, I would stop what I was doing, say a name, look at the phone, and then that shortly after, thereafter, the person that I had said their name would call on the other end of the line, from the other end of the line. And so, in essence, my joke is that I was a kind of an early version of caller ID.
Yeah.
And, you know, 10 years old was when I started doing readings sort of, you know, more. I remember doing readings about that age for people that would ask me to sense things about them or their families or places that I was going to. And I remember really starting to delve into things. Probably I remember that because at 10 years old in upstate New York was when my family moved into a house that was very haunted. So that's probably why that 10-year-old mark has had such a sort of an impact on me.
Okay. But then as you're growing up, so you realize you have this ability and everything. What do you do? How do you end up becoming what you end up becoming today as Chip Coffee, world-renowned psychic and medium? You know, how does that journey happen, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I grew up and went to school just like everybody else did, graduated from high school in South Carolina, went back to New York, which is where I was born. I'm from Southern roots. My parents were both from the South. But I was living in upstate New York during my college years. I spent 4 years in college in upstate New York. And, you know, I always had these abilities, and I would do things with them like read cards or explore things in the paranormal or the spiritual or supernatural fields. But, of course, it was just sort of avocationally.
Right.
I worked in a lot of other fields. I worked in the hospitality industry, traditional therapy and psychology and counseling. I worked in entertainment. I worked in restaurants and bartended and waited tables. So I did a lot of other things, and I was working actually in the travel industry right before I sort of took the leap of faith and dived into the deep end of the pool to see if I could become a full-time psychic and medium. I was working as a travel agency manager. I lost my job very unceremoniously right after 9/11. The travel industry kind of took a nosedive after that tragic day, and I lost my job, and I'd been doing some readings for a phone service prior to actually losing my job. I was, you know, earning a little extra money on the side, and once I lost my job, there were no jobs in Atlanta, which is where I lived, to be had in the travel industry. So, like I said, I took that kind of leap of faith and said, well, I guess now I'm a full-time psychic and medium, and I just sort of dived into the deep end of the pool. I started doing more readings more regularly on the phone service. I started getting some local appearances and then some regional appearances and then national appearances. The TV stuff sort of kicked in from that, and that sort of leads to where I'm sitting tonight talking to you on the phone.
Nice. There you go. Okay. So it makes sense. Sort of like having the skills sort of like an instrument sort of, and eventually you just try, you make a go of it.
It really is a skill set. It's an ability or a skill set. Some people use the word gift. I think everything is a gift. Every breath to me is a gift. You know, it's a gift if you have a singing voice or a talent for acting or play golf well or football well or whatever, piano well, whatever.
Hmm.
So gift is a word that I'm really comfortable with when it comes to what I can do. Power is not a word I'm comfortable with. Power seems way above my pay grade and too grandiose.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't like it when people say, oh, you have psychic powers. I don't have psychic powers. That sounds like, you know, Fantastic Four. That's not at all who I am or what anybody is who does what I do. It's, you know, for me, it's a skill set or an ability, something that I can pretty readily tap into.
Well, that's, now, like, I sort of kind of was alluding to this when we started the show. This is a difficult topic for me because, I've been in this field of sort of more UFOs, Bigfoot conspiracy type stuff for like 10 years now, and I've grown increasingly cynical. And what I find about this whole sort of psychic medium field is that it's just like a minefield. It's very contentious. It's very contentious. And it's like, at times, and I don't like contentiousness, so I'm kind of like, I don't want to get mixed up with all this. You know, these guys are always, they're fighting with skeptics. It's like it's a really like messy sort of thing. And to me, trying to get a handle on all this, it's very difficult because, you know, I've had guests on who are like alien abductees, and they have stories, and it's like, it's hard for me to sort of grapple with a story because I can't quite put my hands around it. You just have to take a leap of faith, if you will. And I feel like this topic is something that kind of requires a bit of a leap of faith. So I kind of
agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
That's why I tell people, honestly, Tim, I tell all my audiences whenever I talk, I said it in my book, I don't give a shit what you believe. Excuse me if I'm not supposed to say that S word on your program, but
you can say
I don't really
more.
Care what you believe. It doesn't matter to me what you believe. It shouldn't matter to you what I believe. It shouldn't matter what anybody else believes, as long as we are not doing any harm to ourselves or to others. And we're leading a decent, ethical, respectable life, then nobody should care what anybody else believes. I tell my audiences, I'm not here to convince or convert you to my ways of thinking, not my job. I'm not here trying to sell you anything. Believe what you want to believe. I don't give a rat's butt. So that's my whole, you talk about contentious, that's my contention. I don't care what anybody believes. It's not, I believe certain things that my friends believe, and I don't believe other things that they believe.
Right, right.
You know, I have a hard time believing sometimes in aliens and Bigfoot. So
You and me both.
So it's one of those things, I have a hard time grasping a lot of the stuff in the paranormal and spiritual and supernatural arenas. As I said when we sort of chatted prior to coming on air, I don't know that I have any of the answers, some of the answers. I don't know that anyone does.
Right.
I think we're all going through this journey and exploring it and trying to figure out some things that we might not ever figure out.
Now, here's sort of an interesting perspective, and I kind of equated this to abductees in a sense, but I think that you'll see this as I sort of elucidate the question a little more. But it seems like with your skill, with your ability, it puts you in a very difficult position in a sense where it's like, I'll compare it to sort of like LeBron James. Somebody meets him, they think they want to play him in basketball, or you meet a comedian that you want to tell him a joke or something. It's like with someone with your skill, you immediately go from another person to like a specimen to people. You know, you appear in it come off differently to other people just because that's human nature. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I mean, how does that feel for you?
Are you asking me if I feel like I'm kind of like a science experiment? I don't know that I fully understand your question.
Well, I guess what I mean is like, you know, it's people see that you have this skill, and then they're going to barrage you with all kinds of questions or requests, or, you know, it's like you cease to become a person, you become more of an instrument to them in a sense.
I fought very hard not to allow that to happen.
Yeah.
Because I fully tell people, you know, I have a life to live. I'm not Chip Coffee psychic and medium 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right,
I don't
right.
do that. You know, just like most people have a job, I clock in and clock out too. I can shut my abilities off. I'm not constantly bombarded and barraged with information because I clock out. And unless I'm focused on the task at hand, I'm not constantly getting information. Just it's not happening to me. So, you know, I have a life to live in the third dimension. I have a house to clean, dishes to wash, friends to hang out with, phone calls to make, you know, Facebook post to post,
exactly.
Things to read on the internet. So I have that sort of life. I love watching television and relaxing and taking naps in the afternoon.
Right.
But when it's time to work, I'm ready to work. And I focus in on the task at hand, and that's when I turn into psychic medium Chip Coffee. It's when I'm focused and kind of clock in for the job.
Okay.
So, you know, and with other people, yeah, I get other people that want to share their stories with me and other people that want to ask me questions or things like that. And, you know, if I'm working, that's great. If I'm not, I just tell them, you know, I'm not tuned in. I'm not focused in. I'm not tapped in right now. So, you know, I'm just socializing. I'm just being Chip right now, not psychic Chip.
Right, right. I think you understood kind of where I was going with that question. You know, it's like I don't go out to the mailman and ask him how the mail works. But
no, and you know, it's just like I get asked, like on your radio show. I enjoy talking about this topic, and you know, selfishly about my own history and my own work. But it's you know, I don't take Chip too seriously. I take the work that I do seriously, but I don't take Chip as a person too seriously, if that makes any sense at all.
I see what you're saying. I see exactly what you're saying. Try to check your ego at the door.
I do.
Absolutely. Well, I can tell because we're already having a lot of laughs, so I'm enjoying this conversation quite a bit. Now, you say, I guess you say you can turn it on and off, sort of tune in. Give me a little sort of explanation of how that sort of works. Does it require anything other than just like, I guess at this point, through years of repetition, you probably are pretty good at sort of, I don't know, maneuvering around this sort of thing, handling it, that kind of thing?
I believe that we all have spirit partners, guides, guardians, whatever you want to call them. The guides and guardians are two different energies, but for the sake of conversation, just saying that we have spirit partners. And I've sort of asked my spirit partners to kind of stand guard, stand sentinel over the fact that I don't want a constant influx of information coming to me. I don't want to be Whoopi Goldberg and ghosts. I don't want to be walking through the grocery store or Walmart or wherever and having, you know, people come to me and say, oh, there's my granddaughter. Say hello for me. My response would be, I'm off the clock. I'm not Western Union for the dead. Say hello your damn self. You know, it's not my job right now to do that. I'm not working right now. You know, but if it's going to, if information comes to me unbidden, Tim, it's because it's going to, I've let my spirit partners know they can send it through if it's really important. Like it's important for me to share something with somebody because they really need to know this information, then they can send that information through. Otherwise, the kind of parallel is it's almost like I have a secretary that's not going to let that phone call come through to me.
That makes sense. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. All right, let me see what else. Now, through all the years of this, have you ever done any sort of like lab testing to try and figure this out? I guess let me back up on that actually. Have you over the years figured out more about sort of how this might work? That's probably the best way, because what I'm interested in is trying to figure out things, you know what I'm saying? So I'm wondering how far you've gone in trying to figure it out.
Well, first of all, good luck with that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why I've been doing the show for so long.
This is the way that I describe anything paranormal. I describe anything paranormal is, again, back to this, you can't understand it, you can't explain it, but you can't deny it. You can't understand what happened, you can't explain it, but you know things got real. Something happened, and it's just, and things in the world around us happen that are just inexplicable. Dots connect, you know, things that appear completely random all of a sudden, if you stop and think about it, don't appear quite as random. So I don't have it figured out. I don't have any clue how I do what I do. I just know that I do it. You brought up the whole thing about being a lab rat. I've never really been a lab rat. I don't have any desire to be a lab rat because, honestly, I don't have a thing to prove to anybody in the scientific community because I don't know that scientists are ever going to be able to prove or disprove what's going on here. I prove myself, hopefully, on a consistent, regular basis to my clients. You know, I've done tens of thousands of readings for clients all over the world. And, you know, they're the ones that I want. They come to me to provide a service to them. They pay me money to do a reading for them. And they're the ones that I want to deliver the goods to. I don't care what scientists believe. I don't feel like I really have, I don't have anything to prove because I don't know what there is to prove.
Right. Well, it's funny because I set up the other question and it's like I already went against myself there because I just, you know, used the term lab rat. That's exactly kind of what I was talking about. It's like, you know, it's a difficult spot to put in because like, it's like there are people who are inherently skeptical of all this then expect you to go into something and strap up all this stuff to you. It's like, why, what gives them the right to expect that of you? And, you know, even I kind of did in the question, but, you know.
And, you know, here's something else, Tim. I'll give you another analogy, another example. I'm a pretty bright guy. And I'm going to brag for a second. I have a pretty good IQ, you know, in the 140 range, you know, and I'm a smart kind of guy. I'm educated. I don't consider myself brilliant. I don't say that from an egotistical standpoint. I just state it as fact. But when I sit down to take standardized tests, I choke. I choke on standardized tests most of the time. I didn't score well on the SATs. I didn't score well on the GREs to get into grad school. I didn't score well on those tests. I squeaked by. I don't do well in stressed situations where someone says, you will perform now.
Right.
I don't do well on those. And I might go into a lab situation and completely screw up. But I may go to a client. Here's an example today for a client. I'll give you an example of something that's kind of random. This lady called me today on the phone and asked me to reach out to her dead husband. He's been gone for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I ask my clients for 3 pieces of information when they want me to talk to the dead. I do direct connections, not open channeling where anybody can come through. That's too confusing and cluttering to me.
Okay.
You tell me who you want me to contact, and that's what I do. I try to make that direct connection. She told me her husband's name, told me it was her husband. I asked for a relationship, and then how long it's been since he passed away. He came through with a lot of information, but one of the funniest things that he came up with was he showed me in my head somehow I saw singer Andy Williams. You know who Andy Williams is?
Yeah.
Showed me Andy Williams, and then he showed me Elvis Presley. And I thought, well, there's a juxtaposition, Andy Williams and Elvis Presley. I don't know why he's showing me these two things. But then he said, messed up, the words messed up. Andy Williams, Elvis Presley, messed up. Now, what the hell does that mean? I have no idea, right? You probably don't either, right?
Right, right.
I have no freaking idea what Andy Williams, Elvis Presley, messed up means. None. She knew exactly. At their wedding, the song that she wanted played at her wedding was the Hawaiian wedding song. She wanted the Andy Williams version played by the DJ. But instead, when the DJ played the song, he played the Elvis version.
Exactly. All right. I see what you're saying.
Where do I come up with that? I can't pull that out of my ass.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And to your credit, you don't try and come up with a story to attach to it. You know what I'm saying? You're not like, I'm getting Elvis and Andy Williams and messed up. And is it about the time you messed up his record collection? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you don't try and leap to a conclusion. You just put that info out there and then see what works.
How it works, I guess. Well, you know what? Talking to the dead, making a communication, for me, I can only talk for myself, it's not like us having a conversation right now. It's kind of like spotty cell phone reception, if you will.
Hmm.
That's the only way I can kind of describe it. Or riding in a car and listening to your radio and the signal wavers in and out. That's kind of the way it is. And spirit will get things through to me the best possible way that they can. Sometimes it's an image or a short video or a couple of words or a line from a movie or a book or however they can manage to throw that information from where they are to where I am. That's the way they get that information. All I got was Andy Williams, Elvis Presley, messed up. And you know, I don't want to write her story. I don't know what that might mean to her because it meant nothing to me.
Mm.
Nothing. But immediately it struck something in her. She absolutely knew what that message was about.
Now, it's interesting because you seem to have multiple abilities. But I don't, again, I'm kind of a neophyte when it comes to this stuff, so I don't really understand, I guess, if that's particularly unique or not. Because, you know, looking over your stuff, it says you can sort of see, you can kind of predict the future in a way. Precognitive, clairprescient, clairprescient psychic. So I guess, explain what a precognitive clairprescient psychic is, and, well, first explain that, because then I have a follow-up. So
I have no friggin' idea what all that means. It's just nice words. But the deal is this. All those clairs, clairvoyant, clairsentient, clairnascient, clairprescient, planet clair, I don't even know.
Yeah,
but the
Claire
deal
O'Regan,
is,
my neighbor.
It's all whatever, but I'm just a psychic. It means psychic, the word psychic to me means, and I've redefined a lot of these words to sort of pull them out of the realm of woo-woo. Psychic to me is the ability or the skill set to access information or energy that you can't get using your 5 human senses. That's all it is. It's a knowing something that you don't pragmatically have a way of knowing, or you can't explain how you know it. You just somehow you know it. So, yes, I am able to sometimes sense things for people, and sometimes those things are future events. Sometimes it's things about their past or their present or their future. I can sense things about objects sometimes, although The object stuff is not my strongest skill set. I can sense things very readily if I walk into many locations. I can sense things that happened in those locations. What I'm not very good at, I'm not the best animal psychic on the planet, although I do sometimes pick up things. I'm sort of envious of people who can see colored auras. I don't generally see colored auras. I sometimes will see like an energy field. You know, when you're driving down the road and you see that mirage of water in the distance when it's hot and the heat is shimmering on the road?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I'll see that surrounding people, but I typically don't see colors. And I'm a little envious of people that see colored auras. So I think that different psychics and mediums, just like the doctors and lawyers have different specializations, I think that the abilities or skill sets of certain psychics and mediums vary also. So there are things that I feel like I'm really competent and good at, and there are other things that I don't feel I'm as skilled at.
Yeah. When you're having these sort of precognitive experiences, is it, I guess what I'm wondering is, like, does it feel different than when you're communicating as a medium? Like, is it, or is it all sort of within the same feeling in a sense? It's hard to sort of get the words to really express what I'm saying, but I think you kind of
I do understand
what I'm saying. Yeah,
it does feel different when I'm getting information. It just feels like it doesn't belong to me. It doesn't feel like it's coming from me. It feels like it's coming to me. There's a medium whose name is John Holland, and John Holland says when he deals with his clients that the information he receives is through him, not for him. So he often says the mantra, less of me, more of spirit, when he does things, so that he doesn't want his stuff, his crap, to interfere with the process. That's a hard thing because, you know, we who do what I do can't just push ourselves to the side readily. You know, we're still in here somewhere. But it just feels different. I feel like when I've reached out talking, if people ask me to talk to a deceased loved one, that I'm specifically talking to that individual. Whereas when I'm doing psychic stuff, then I'm a little more open to hearing from my spirit partners or anybody in spirit who wishes at that point in time to communicate with me. I open the channel a little bit wider when I'm doing psychic stuff.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of how I was interpreting it. Yeah, you sort of just open up the gate a little and see what comes in, yeah.
Right.
Now, you mentioned these spirit partners a few times. Tell me a little bit about this, how this, not necessarily how it works, but how it works as far as you understand it, you know what I mean? Like, is there like a relationship with these entities, for lack of a better term, and sort of, enlighten me to all that?
How to start? I believe we have spirit guides and we have guardians or guardian angels. I use guardian just as the loose term for that. But I believe that our spirit partners, and those are two separate entities on planet Chip. Spirit guides are benevolent, wise energies who have learned a lot about the way things work. They are elevated souls. They've sort of earned their brownie points, their merit badges, and they have been entrusted to help us facilitate a better life and to sort of help us in a lot of ways to meander our way through the third dimension.
Okay.
Typically, we have not known these souls or entities during the current lifetime, although that's not the hard and set rule. It's certainly the rule rather than the exception. We typically don't know our spirit guides. They have lived a full lifetime on the planet and have returned to spirit, sometimes many lifetimes on the planet, in order to earn their stripes. Guardian angels are a different thing. Guardian angels are emissaries of God. Guardian angels have been appointed by God. They're in the angelic realm. They're the ones that are God's emissaries and God's protectors. They have never spent a full lifetime in the flesh, but they are very different than guides. But both of them work with us to hopefully our benefit. And that's kind of the way that I view who partners with us. You know, and there's God and there's other people that are there around in spirit that, you know, there's a laundry list depending on what you believe. But we have a lot of energies in spirit that work with us.
Hmm. But as far as you specifically go, this your spirit guides, like I said, is there a relationship? Do they have names to you? Do you communicate like with them? How does the communication go down?
If I'm directly communicating with them, they just talk to me a lot of times when I'm doing readings. But if I'm communicating with them, yes, I know their names. And, you know, I just kind of have a telepathic conversation with them. Sometimes I talk to them out loud. Hmm. Sometimes I talk to them in my head. It just depends. And, you know, sometimes I get a response. Sometimes, that I feel is a clear response. Sometimes I get just a feeling of a response. Sometimes I really don't feel a lot, but know that whatever I'm saying, that it's being heard.
Yeah.
So it's just a weird sort of, and I know all this sounds weird, and that's okay, but it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and sometimes, quite honestly, it feels a bit schizophrenic. But, you know, hey, I and a lot of the kids that I work with on Psychic Kids and a lot of adults, I say, have yourself checked. And I've certainly had myself checked to see that I'm mentally stable. I lead a crazy life. I love to laugh. And, I'm crazy, but I'm not effing crazy. So, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I know that what I say sounds a bit impossible and what I claim to do sounds a bit far-fetched. But, you know, it does to me, too. It does to me, Tim. But
yeah.
It is what it is.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I hope I'm not coming off too – I'm not coming off
aggro here. No, you're not. And I think
that,
you know, you're asking some great questions. And, you know, it's – and I don't feel like I'm defending or debating with you, which I don't like doing. You know, I don't like being put on the spot. I don't mind someone coming to me and saying, tell me about what – I don't understand, because that's basically – and don't be offended by this word. That's ignorance.
Hmm.
That's – I just don't know. But I have been confronted a lot by skeptics, and put that in quotation marks, who rabidly come at me, and, you know, that doesn't set well with me. I don't like dealing with skeptics, because a lot of the times those people who identify as skeptics that come to me to discredit and discount and try to just be aggressive, assertive, combative assholes. And, you know, that is totally unappreciated. Again, I don't care what you believe. Why should you care what I believe? Why should you want to come and try to, you know, take a healthy crap on what I do or what anybody else believes or does? You know, mind your own freaking business. If you don't believe, good, fine and dandy. Why are you trying to, you know, it's almost like overzealous religious people.
Right.
It's in the same ilk.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we've discussed skeptics on the show plenty of times, and believe me, I'm no fan of skeptics, and it's remarkable. It does seem like this milieu of the psychic medium gets particularly attacked by the skeptical community. It's
oh well, they've gone so far as to absolutely hijack my Wikipedia page. They have just maligned me, and there's nothing I can do about it. They malign me constantly. They've tried to come to my events and expose me or sting me at my events, and my response to that is, screw you. If you screw with me, I'm going to screw with you. And I have in the past.
Hmm.
And, you know, if they want to play tit for tat, you know what? My dad was an Irish sailor, and he was a spunky little guy. And you know what? I try to be very as much of a pacifist as I can. But don't push my last button, or I'm going to come out swinging, bitches.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, I did. I read the article about the ones that tried to hijack the event, and I thought it was...
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know what they did? They tried to come in and fake me out. We've got a huge book with pictures in it. We've identified a lot of them. They like to brag. They like to brag on the internet. It's not easy to find them on the internet. We knew who these people were. One of the primary people that came to that event was the girlfriend of one of the chief skeptics with the JREF. She was, you know, I knew who she was right away. And I played right into her friggin' hands. I gave her exactly what she wanted. I just was so kind. You know, I was laughing my ass off, because while they thought they were pulling one over on me, I was just constantly, I was screwing with them.
Right.
And, you know, the only thing that I regret with how that was handled was, you know, I thought that they would try to keep it quiet. They tried to go public with that whole thing. And, you know, blah, 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 blah. I don't care what people believe. You know, I played around with them. They come back again to me. If they're respectful and they behave and they pay their money to come to my event, fine, they can stay. But if they try to sting me or hoodwink me, I may give them a fake reading.
Hmm.
I may just F with them up a storm, just to my own delight. But here's the deal. They'll never know if I'm doing it or not.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
They'll never know if I'm doing it or not. I may be effing with them while they're trying to F with me. You know what? If they're coming there to try to rape me in a certain way, I'm going to fuck back. Excuse my French.
That's fine. If you want to say fuck, you can. I don't care.
Let's say that. If they're coming there to rape me, I'll fuck back.
There you go. Well, I wanted to. This is an observation about these folks. So I just want to read this part because it just goes to show you what kind of people we're dealing with here. It says, when he stated from stage that he was getting an older woman and a child, we sprang on that statement as coming from our people. Then we just wrote it through, agreeing to everything he said. It's like, how can you? In my mind, I read this from these people, and it's on the Sizecop thing. It's like. That's just bullshit, man. Like, first of all, they're making the assumption. They're leaping to the conclusion. It's like, sprang on that statement. It's like, get the fuck out of here.
Tim, they came to me with stories. Catch these stories that these people came to me with. One of the stories that was fabricated to try to screw with me was a dead mother. I have a dead mother. That's a hot topic for me. My mother was very dear to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that almost is spitting in the face of anybody who's got a dead relative there, especially a mother or a parent. That's hurtful enough. The second woman was a child. Supposedly, her story was she had a 2 or 3 year old child that had been killed when he was hit by a car. A dead child hit by a car. Think of the parents that were there legitimately that may have had a child that died. That's the death of a child. That's horrific.
Yeah.
But catch the third one. The fake story made by the third woman was a sister who died at 9/11.
Oh, man. This is like the behavior of trolls. This is not the behavior of people listen, Chip, I'm skeptical about this stuff, but I'm not coming at it trying to fool you or trying to make up bullshit and try and mess with you, man. Like, this is, you know, come at it with your hands up. Come at it as a open-minded, honest individual, maybe we'll get to some answers. But don't come at it as a dick. That's what they're doing.
Well, you know, here's the deal. They came at me with utter fabrications and lies.
Yeah.
And you know what? Here's the deal. Let's just do a what-if, okay, Tim? Let's do a what-if. I explained to you earlier that I've done tens of thousands of readings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the deal. Even if I did fuck up, even if I did just totally go off the rails with their readings, even if I didn't know who they were and just messed up completely, let me just ask you this. Does that one instance, or those two or three instances with those people in that audience, does that discredit or discount the other thousands of readings that I have done for clients who've said, oh, my God, you told me things that you could not possibly have known?
Right.
Really? I mean, if a doctor does one operation and he messes up, the patient doesn't live for whatever reason, does that discount all the other people whose lives he saved? You know, I don't know the answer to that. That may be a bad analogy, but I just look at it in that capacity. And if you're coming at me with lies, maybe I'm not going to be at my best to do things. Maybe I picked up on the stories that I pick up on energy. I don't know how I pick it up. And I'm the first to, maybe I picked up on their lies and I saw their lies as truths and didn't identify them as lies. I don't know. I don't know how that would work in that case. But I do know in their case, in their specific case, I knew who they were. We had already identified them. My crew asked me you asked me about Greta, my assistant. Greta knows that we knew who they were. She knew that I was going to go in and I was going to give them exactly what they wanted and that we were going to have a good laugh about it.
Yeah.
And they tried to go way public and say that they had pulled a fast one over on me. And basically I've just said, no, you didn't. You really didn't. And again, I may do the same thing to you again, and you'll never know for sure. You're not going to prove a friggin' thing on me.
Hmm.
Because you can't.
Right, exactly. You weren't compelled, though, at least at the end of the event, to be like, hey, by the way, X, Y, and Z out there in the audience, I know what you were up to, and joke's on you, or something like that.
In hindsight, that probably would have been a good idea. I didn't do it.
Yeah. Maybe next time if it happens. Just because.
In hindsight, yeah. I did not do that.
That way, at least then you have the.
You know, because, hey, it wasn't. Well, and to give you an idea, they were pissed off at me because a year or two earlier than that, the boyfriend of the lady that was there with the dead child that supposedly got hit by the car, her boyfriend tried to sneak in on a fake ticket to one of my events in L.A., and we caught him and threw him out.
Nice.
So they were already miffed at me for catching them once before.
They're always miffed. That's part of the problem with
you. Well, you know, what a horrible way to live. So many of them don't have any belief system whatsoever, and that's fine. But for me, that would be a horrible way to live. But, you know, you don't have to be an asshole about things. You don't have to be so combative and, you know, come at people with your fangs bared and say our goal is to take you down. You know, that to me is a little bit reprehensible. It's a lot reprehensible.
Right. Well, it's like you can have no belief system if you don't want, if that's what you ascribe to, but it shouldn't be your life's goal then to tear down everyone else's belief system at the same time. It's like,
correct.
You know, now you're just like an intellectual nihilist or something. It's depressing.
You know what? I equate a lot of the people that are in the skeptical community, or at least some of the people in the skeptical community, to the Westboro Baptist Church.
Wow, that's a strong statement. But I can kind of see it in a way. They are pretty intense folks, and they're angry.
Yes, they are.
They're angry. I mean, what's to get really deep on them?
And they are mean.
Hmm. Well, what do you think generates the anger about it? You know, it's like. Because I just can't seem to muster the anger about something like this. I mean, I think they portray it as if they're trying to, you know, that they think people are being taken advantage of. But at the same time, it's like, to be quite honest, even if this is all a big show, right? If it makes people feel better, then what difference does it make really at the end of the day? And it's like, that's how I see it. I mean.
And you know what? Here's the deal. And thank you for saying that, by the way. Even if I'm the biggest fake, fraud, sham, snake oil salesman on the face of the planet, if someone leaves me feeling better and healed, and that's my goal in my work, is to provide comfort and healing. If someone is comforted and something inside of them heals or feels better when they leave me, so fucking what?
Right. Exactly. So, yeah. It's frustrating. It's frustrating dealing with these folks. I can totally agree.
It is frustrating dealing with them, and that's why I try not to engage.
Mm.
I don't want to have to convince or convert. I don't want to have to defend or debate. I don't like getting into that. It's just it's a fruitless endeavor because nobody's opinion is going to change, and basically all it is it's frustrating and it's like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah. Now, someone on my Facebook, I just want to like clear this up, or clear the deck, if you will, because he said, do me a favor, ask why you refuse to answer any critical questions asked of you in the past on your Facebook page. I think we established this over the course of this conversation so far, that you're all set with that.
What questions have I refused to answer?
I asked him that, actually, and he said it was on his Facebook years ago that he'd not be answering any questions that they were deemed too critical of him. In other words, people asking about fakery on Paranormal State, as this was the time period.
Oh, let's talk about fakery on Paranormal State.
Okay, then.
Hey, I'm totally open to talking about fakery on Paranormal State.
Was there? I guess. I don't know. I don't know what you're saying.
You want to talk about it? I mean, whoever it is asking the question, I'm totally open to talking about fakery on Paranormal State. You know, if you're still communicating with them, ask them what they want to know. I'm totally open to that.
All right. Well, I'll forward your answer to him then, because I was kind of just wanted to make sure I asked the question because it's.
Oh well,
like, basically, you know,
on Paranormal State, let's talk about that. I was never asked. I did 31 episodes of a show called Paranormal State,
mm-hmm.
and the time that I was on that show, I was never, and put that in all caps, underline it, highlight it, however you will, never asked to fake anything, nothing. And there was people have accused me of, oh, the producers or someone, anyone, fed you information. That is a steaming heap of bullshit. No one ever fed me. I was kept – I spent most of last week with the executive producer of Paranormal State. She will come out and tell you in no uncertain terms that at no point in time did they ever feed me any information. No one did. I spent time sitting in vans, sequestered in my hotel room, feeling like a leper because people couldn't talk to me or interact with me. Cast, crew, no one was allowed to say anything other to me than, hey, how you doing, in social conversation. No
right.
Talk about the production, the cast, the casting, the crew, nothing. I couldn't talk about nothing. So I was kept completely in the dark. But with the allegations or assumptions or whatever word you want to use that anything was faked on Paranormal State. If it was, it was nothing that I was asked to do. I would have walked away from it and said, kiss my butt. I'm not going to do this. But I can say, in all honesty, hand on a Bible, lie detector test, I was never asked to fake anything on Paranormal State, nor was I fed information by anyone, producers, cast, crew, clients, anyone. I was never given information. Okay. Never.
It's a double-edged sword, or it's a double bind in a sense too, because like reality TV and psychic stuff. So you get two camps of skepticism there. It's tough.
And I understand the whole reality TV thing because people ask, you know, oh, it's scripted. No, reality TV for the most part, some of it is very scripted, but the shows that I have done have been what's called soft scripted. Do you understand what soft scripted is?
I have a good idea, but you should explain it to the audience. So
soft scripted is basically, you know, cameras are following you around documentary style 24 hours a day. It's not Big Brother.
Right.
But cameras, you know, they say, we're going to shoot this scene now. We're going to do an interview scene now. So there is, you're told in most circumstances for certain scenes, those scenes are set up. You don't have a script written, but you know what your intention is to do in that specific scene.
Mm.
That your intention is to talk to the clients, or your intention is to explain this, or your intention is to go in and see if you pick up anything. So that is what soft scripted is. It's you've got a game plan going. Soft scripted is like having a game plan going without actually writing dialogue or writing the scene out from start to finish.
Okay.
So absolutely, what we did was soft scripted, no doubt about it. But it wasn't a scripted series, and nothing that I appeared on was ever staged or faked.
Right, right. It's not like the Kardashians or anything like that.
Well, no. It's not like that.
Not that I don't like the Kardashians, don't get me wrong, but, you know.
Well, I don't have as impressive a derriere as most of the Kardashians, so, yeah.
Well, we're all blessed with certain gifts. What can you say, right?
Well, mine is not to have a big butt.
Hi there. Do you have any books on how to get rid of ghosts?
Have you tried telling them you're ready for a commitment?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Oh, like a relationship.
Exactly. That'll send them running, huh?
Oh, I like her.
Here you go. Maybe this'll help.